hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. My guest in studio with me is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions for him during the next half hour. Call those in to area code 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Are you prepared for students to be back in town yet?
Well, we're getting closer every day, but yeah, it'll be good to have them back. It's always good to feel that energy and enthusiasm, that excitement of classes starting up again, and it's a big part of the community.
It's the calm before the storm if you don't look at all the construction.
Yeah, that's right. You're exactly right.
So speaking of the construction, I wanted to pose to you a question we asked of Mayor Dennis on last week's program, and it comes from Brian, who has written in, and he says, Greater Lafayette is going through a building boom, and he says it's also had a long and strange attraction, he says, to parking lots that could never even be filled in the salad days of retail. He cites Sagamore Parkway, Teal Road, 52, South Street, etc. And he says, we still seem to be putting down lots of asphalt and concrete and putting up buildings without much concern to the heat island effect. And he says, we haven't had much canopy, and we're losing some green space because of all of this. So he wants to know what specific laws or statutes have the local government leaders been passing or thinking about to halt what he calls a dangerous trend. And he cites the city of Louisville having some sort of a problem with this. And so I thought I'd put this to you as well as talking with Mayor Dennis about it a little last week.
Sure. Well, you know, the community as a whole, Lafayette, West Lafayette, through the Area Plan Commission, we have all adopted what's called complete street policies, where we look at when we put in new streets or when we redo existing streets whenever possible, we look at opportunities for green infrastructure, rain gardens, bioswales, bike lanes. We actually reduce the size, the width of the lanes sometimes as calming, traffic calming ways to do that. And so we do think about that. You know, Lafayette is a tree city USA, so we're actually not losing canopy inside the city limits of Lafayette. We've been that for over 20 years now. We add so many trees each year. So when we look at developing streets, when we look at how we develop our parkland, when we look at how we develop our trails, you know, we do take that into consideration. We do think about the canopies and other green, sustainable ways to do things. On the parking lots, you know, most of those are probably private developers who are building those lots. The APC does have standards of how many parking spaces that you need to have for the size of the building. Now, there has been some adjustment to that over the few years and actually reduced some of those requirements. And then there are ways through the Board of Zoning Appeals to even get that reduced a little bit more. So people are, I think as a community, people are looking at that. When we look at sustainability, when we look at climate change, being good stewards of the environment, I know it's something myself and our staff, and I know West Lafayette takes a look at it in the county, to see what we can do. There's not always a good answer for it, but I think if you look at the way that we're designing our streets, if you look at the way that we're doing planters and plantings and all the green things, I think you'll see that that effort is being made here in the community. I can't argue that you can go certain places and you can see some at private developments and private retail, see some very, very large parking lots. That's true. But I think in this area, people are thinking about that and looking to the future and seeing how we need to do things to make sure that we are sustainable, that we are environmentally friendly, and that we don't have some of those issues.
On to another topic. One of the things that had been kind of an open secret for some time was made official this week. Todd Rokita announced he will run for Joe Donnelly's Senate seat next year. He's got Luke Messer and a number of other Republicans in a primary before he gets to run against Senator Donnelly. But I wanted to ask you, as a prominent Democrat in an area that has seen Congressman Rokita and Congressman Booyer before him have pretty much a Republican kind of stranglehold on this area of the state where Congress is concerned. Do you think that there are up-and-coming Democrats or even established, perhaps, state lawmakers who might be viable candidates to run against whomever the Republicans put up?
Well, first of all, I got to say, I think Joe Donnelly is a fantastic candidate. I mean, I know that they say that nationally he is, you know, maybe in danger because of the state of Indiana and how red the state is. But I can tell you, I know Joe Donnelly personally. I have for a long time. He is a great Hoosier. He does things that he believes is right. He is very nonpartisan. He works on both sides of the aisle. And I don't know. I can't think of anybody in our party that would be a better
No, I mean for the 4th District Congressional
Seat. Oh, I'm sorry.
Seat.
Oh, you
sorry.
Mean to fill Congressman Rokita's
That's right,
release.
Yes.
You know, I haven't heard any, inside talk about that, who might be willing to fill that. I'm sure there's some folks that will probably step up. That is I'm a realist. That is a very, very difficult seat for a Democrat. If you look at the way that district is laid out and you look at how the registrations are in some of those counties, you know, that is a very, very difficult seat. We've had some good candidates in the past. Nels Ackerson was a good candidate that came close several years ago. But boy, I'll tell you what, that is an uphill climb for somebody to do. And I think that's part of the reason why people have talked about, you know, how do we look at redistricting for the whole state when we look at offices to make sure that we can have races where people really get out there, share ideas, talk about what they believe, and then if they don't do what they've said and they're elected, you know, then hold them accountable during the next election, but have an opportunity that people have an actual real voice. And so, you know, I personally, I'm in all honesty, Stan, nobody said anything to me about who might run, but that's whoever run would have to raise a tremendous amount of money also, and to quite frankly, at this point, not to have started with any infrastructure and based on the district, that'd be an uphill climb for somebody.
Do you think that and I think it's fair to say this, the gerrymandering of the 4th District keeps possible Democratic candidates, even people who could maybe have challenged Congressman Rokita in a serious way, and he's not really had a serious challenger since he's been in office, keeps them away from even thinking about running for that seat?
Yeah, I mean, you know, even if you're a great candidate, when you sit down and you look at the numbers and you look at the registrations and you look at how much money that you would have to raise, you know, that's just a tough decision for anybody to make, even if they're getting into it for all the right reasons. I mean, people have families. That's a tremendous commitment. And I'm sure, I can't cite you a specific person that's told me that, but I would be confident in saying that, yeah, there's probably people that's looked at that would have done if they had a chance, would have done a very good job. I don't know if they would have win or not, but certainly I think they would have done a good job and have just looked at that and said, that's just, you know, not something we're willing to take on, because they do have other considerations in their life. And that's unfortunate, I think, because of things like that. And then, being in public office is tough business. Your life is an open book. I think it's really difficult, and I think we probably do, for a variety of reasons, lose a lot of people that should run for office, that would do a good job in office and would do it for the right reasons. We probably do lose a lot of those from participating.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Mayor Tony Rozworski of Lafayette. Send in your questions via email to ask@WBAA.org. Tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter or call them in at 496-1999. Let's spend a few minutes talking about this week's announcement of Needle Exchange, which will get started tomorrow. It'll be in Lafayette in the Centennial neighborhood. You had previously said that was not a place that you had hoped it would locate. What was your reaction to yesterday's announcement?
Well, I mean, my position has really not changed all along. I think I've been very consistent that I understand from a public health standpoint that there is a concern with the spread of HIV and Hep C, and I certainly understand that. But I've said all along, I didn't want it in that location or other residential areas of the community. I feel that there is opportunity for things to happen or could have effects on those neighborhoods that simply are not good. And so Dr. Adler, I do appreciate he came to see me last week and told me of that decision. But as I told him that I don't approve of that location, my position has not changed on that. I don't think it's a good spot for it. I understand. I told him that I respected him as a physician. He said he felt the necessary as a physician to do something, and I said I respect that, but I cannot support that location. He pledged to me to continue to look for a spot that we could all agree on, but he felt that he needed to do that, and so I understand that. But we're going to be watching that very, very closely. Like I said, I don't. I'm a little disappointed. There, you know, a couple things. I've been honest about this. You know, when the Hep C and HIV piece of it, I don't think really caught on in the community. Then it became, you know, talk more about how it would affect the heroin and the opioid epidemic, and I've been clear about that. I feel because of the way the program structured, it will have minuscule, if any, effect on the opioid or heroin epidemic in the community, and I don't think it should be portrayed as of that being the focal point, because it's really not, and I don't think it's going to have that big of impact. I'm also very concerned, I think I might have spoke about this before, that the program down in Bloomington has a tremendous amount of unaccounted for needles, to the point where the police department has become very busy trying to take those calls of going to pick up found needles, to the point where they are actually referring those calls to the people that are running that needle exchange program, and you guys covered it here recently. Just within a day, we saw now that Madison County, who had a needle exchange, has actually voted 5-2 to unfund their needle exchange program. And so, you know, I still have a lot of concerns. I support doing something, but I think it should be done right. I wish the legislature would relook at this and relook at the structure of how this is done. I wish they'd put in some accountability into it and help us structure it in a way that we think it could be more successful. So I'll continue to work to try to find a better location, but we're going to be watching it very, very closely. I did get the protocol. I've been asking, really, quite frankly, for those for months, and did finally get those about a month ago, and they are better than some of the other places. I was happy with the protocols.
Better in what ways?
They're looking, well, they're going to be more restrictive on how many needles you can actually get, as opposed to the story that you saw where one lady got 400 needles a week. There's going to be a calculation that was that's done that would greatly reduce the number of needles that you can get each time if you don't make a one-to-one exchange. And so, you know, I'm going to cautiously watch it. I'm going to keep trying diligently to find a location that I think is more appropriate.
Let me ask you about the locations for a second, because one of the things that was said yesterday is when we called down to the health department, they said, you know, we think we have the resources out there for perhaps even a couple of locations, be it a couple of fixed locations or one fixed and one mobile, which all these are permutations we've talked about. Do you think that if there were multiple locations, that would actually ease some of your concerns, because then everything wouldn't be concentrated in one area?
Well, I think if we're going to have multiple hours and multiple days, certainly having a couple locations may not be a bad idea. I mean, we've had a couple spots that I was hoping would work out, and they didn't work out, that I thought we could even, at those spots, we could run some multiple days and multiple hours. It would help spread things out, and I thought it would be okay. But unfortunately, they haven't worked out, and so we're going to have to just keep an eye on that. It still has to be the right spot. It still has to be the right location. And, you know, I hope, you know, I really want to see the data. I want to see that this really is making a difference, or in these other places that it really is, you know, making a difference. Because I've never wavered on this. I am very concerned, because it is not a one-to-one exchange, and many people that are involved, and we want people to get well and get help. They're not bringing them back. We don't know if they're still sharing them. And right now, we don't get a tremendous, in fact, it's pretty few number of calls of people actually finding needles anyway. The number's pretty small. And I'm very concerned, from what I've heard in other communities, about all of a sudden finding lots of needles, in the way more than they found before the program. And that is a huge concern for me, and we're going to be keeping a very close eye on that.
Do you think that this discussion, as it's gone on over the course of 8 or 9 months now, has become kind of factionalized? Because it seems like you and Mayor Dennis and your two police chiefs have now kind of lined up on the side of being skeptical of whether this is going to be helpful. It seems like Jeremy Adler and the rest of the health department folks have said, look, we had this approved by the county. We need to go and do something somewhere, sometime. Has it turned out to be kind of an us versus them sort of thing?
Well, I don't know if it's an us versus them, but there certainly are different points of view on, will it be effective? What's the long-term outcomes going to be? What effects could it have on the community? Could it do more harm than good to the community? And so I think everybody on each side is trying to do what they believe is right. But certainly this is a situation where there is a significant difference of opinion on what is right and what's best for the community and how that should be handled. And again, I think if the programs were structured a little bit different, some of that would certainly be helpful.
Let me ask about the factionalization again in a different way. So the county's position yesterday seemed to be that there had been either, depending on how you look at it, so much inertia on this or indeed opposition, from the mayors, from the police chiefs, that the county just finally said, all right, you know what, regardless of how many people, and including powerful people like you and John Dennis, are opposed to it, the county said, look, or Jeremy Adler at least said, we have to do something. Do you feel like that opposition from you and Mayor Dennis and your police chiefs almost forced the county's hand in some way to say, look, we have to put it at the health department, which happens to be in this neighborhood that Mayor Osworski has said we don't want the needle exchange in?
Well, I think, from the very beginning, there was lots of discussion. I asked them at the very first meeting where they approved it to table it and give the community more time to discuss it. I mean, I think we have to be honest. There was one basic meeting down there. Lots of people, until we had this discussion over the last 8 or 9 months, didn't have a clue that a needle exchange or a Gateway to Hope program was even coming into the community. One, that we had that meeting, there was a vote, approved. Well, it wasn't unanimous. One commissioner, Tom Murtaugh, voted against that. And then it was, okay, we're going to get started. So quite frankly, I think the community discussion that we've had has been very important. I think it's educated a lot more people in the community. I think a lot more people are aware of the needle exchange. Some may be for, some may be against. But I think without that, I think we'd have a lot of uninformed folks right now, and I don't think that's good. And if you look at the Madison County situation where they started one, and now a little bit later, they're all of a sudden defunding it, and it's going to stop. I mean, I would prefer to have these hard discussions, have this community discussion, and try to get this right for
the long term. You're correct when you say you've been very, very consistent about this, and you have not wavered on it at all. You haven't been on this program waffling at all, and I credit you for that, because there are a lot of people who have spoken out against the position that you have taken and that Mayor Dennis has taken. And we got a number of tweets back about our program with Mayor Dennis last month that were not at all kind to him. But I mean, back to the idea of, do you think that opposition caused in some ways an outcome that you had specifically said, I really don't want it in this neighborhood just north of downtown? And because that's where the health department happens to
be. Sure.
Today.
Well, I mean, I guess if you look at that from the standpoint that I've tried to do what I think is right for the community, that I have tried to be respectful, but also standing by what I believe. And because of that, that had to be at the health department. I guess you could say that. But I would also say in response to that, there has been some locations that I would have been comfortable with, and unfortunately, the folks that own or affiliated with those areas weren't comfortable with the needle exchange being there. So it's not like I have said no to every location that then forced them to that location. Some places that I was okay with, we simply couldn't get the permission to put it there, and so I guess it's probably a combination of things that has led to that ultimate decision.
On another part of this, and then I promise I'll move away from it, now that we see that this thing is going to start tomorrow and it's supposed to open for, an hour and a half, 2 hours every Friday going forward, do you see it as in your interest, even if you're opposed to it, to see that it succeeds?
Well, I mean, certainly I want people to get help. I want people, if we have a way and the data will show that it's actually helping to reduce Hep C and HIV, that's obviously a good thing that's in the community. And so we certainly would want that to happen. But I also will be aware, I don't want, even if that is working, but we're having people get stuck with needles that are being found, that we're having a needle issue, there still has to be some kind of balance to that. And so I guess I don't have the luxury of just saying, I'm going to take one full side or the other. I'm going to have to watch both sides of this and see, does the benefit outweigh the negative, or is the negative actually outweighing the benefit? And I'll be very clear about that if we get to that point, too. So I guess I'm not sure I answered your question, but I guess I don't have the luxury of drawing a line that line may have to go like this depending on what's happening.
What you're saying is the definition of success is variable.
It is.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rzeworski, and we've got about 10 minutes left to take your calls. You can call 496-1999. You can also send an email to ask@wbaa.org. You can tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter as well. Of course, the big story this summer has been construction, and you've begun the construction on South Street / State Road 26 and Sagamore Parkway.
Yes, sir.
That was initially set to be a 28-day construction. You said you were out driving Sagamore Parkway earlier today. What's the latest you're hearing on that timeline?
Well, actually, I go out and check every day. But yeah, but thank you. Yes, I was out there today, met with the two construction inspectors and also the lead superintendent from Milestone, and we are on schedule. We said we would open on the 14th, and we are still on schedule to open on the 14th. If you look out there, you'll see a lot of the asphalt's down. A lot of the new poles are up. A lot of the curb is in, the sidewalk, the drive approaches, some of the new water line. So we're actually about a half a day ahead of schedule right now. Now, there's some rain in the forecast tomorrow, but if things stay on track, we'll be opening Monday. Now, I want to make it clear to our motoring public, and so I appreciate, Stan, you asking the question. It'll be probably later in the afternoon on Monday because all the work will be done and we'll be finishing up, but then we have to begin to move as part of this project also in getting this done. The next phase is we actually move all the traffic. The intersection will be done and be ready to open, but we're also moving all the traffic to the westbound, west side lane. So, you know, people have been driving on the opposite side. I'm sorry, they're going to move to the eastbound lane. So they've been driving on the westbound lanes right now. The intersection gets done. We move all the traffic over to those lanes so we can start digging up the westbound lane. So not only do we have to finish the intersection, we have to actually physically move the traffic. So during the day on Monday, we'll be moving all those barrels. We'll start to route people to the new side of the road. And by the end of the day, Monday, we should have all that complete.
I was driving around the other day. I forget where I was. Maybe it was on 65 somewhere. I saw this amazing truck that had this arm going out from either side of it, and you'd start the barrel on one side of the truck, and the barrel would roll across the front of these rollers on this arm all the way to the other. The most amazing thing I've seen in a long time.
Well, you know what? I've not seen one
of
those.
It looked like a lot of fun to do.
I'm going to have to take a look at that.
So while we're on the subject of timetables, it's been a few months since you and I have talked about what's going on downtown with the Mark Building and the old National Headquarters and the Riverfront Promenade near the corner of 2nd and Columbia there. Mm-hmm. What's the update on those?
Well, you know, we meet regularly on that. The rain has been hard on that project also, you know, as they were trying to get out of the ground. But for the most part, it's still very close to being on schedule. Old National Bank's regional headquarters, they should be able to start moving in towards the end of this year, which will keep them on schedule. The Riverfront Promenade should be done towards the end of this year, probably in November, which is, we talked about the end of October and the 1st of November, so we should be very close. And then the rest of the building, the units as they described, should be able to open around spring of 2018. So even with a lot of rain, they're close. It is a little bit behind, not perfectly on schedule, but for everything that's happened with the weather, they're doing pretty good. So we're excited about getting Old National in there yet this year, and we're certainly excited about getting that first phase of the Riverfront Promenade opened up before the end of the year.
We've talked with Mayor Dennis and others about how the rain has affected a number of the projects in this area this summer, and it was one of those perfect storm things, not to make a pun out of it, but it seems like that's been the story of this summer with all the construction. Is we had it planned on very tight timetables, and then nature decided to intervene, and it ended up affecting, by happenstance, a larger number of projects than would have on a given summer. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, the weather, actually, it was a double-edged sword, right? We had a very mild winter.
Right.
So we were able to work through the winter much more than we typically would be able to. And we came out of winter actually ahead of schedule on a lot of things, which is, you know, a little bit unusual, but certainly welcome. And then the rain came, and And it came a lot. That was the problem. I mean, if it would have just rained normally with being ahead like we were, we'd have still been in really good shape. But it rained a lot. But the last week has been really good. I think a lot of the projects are really close to being on schedule again. Like I said, we're actually – I talked to Ethan today when I was out there. He said, technically, Mayor, he goes, I'm a half a day ahead of schedule. So if it doesn't rain tomorrow – this is going to finish up just like we talked about. Our Brown Street project is a little bit ahead of schedule. We got behind a little bit on it with some of the big rains we had, filling up holes, big holes that we were doing. But it's back either right on schedule or maybe just a little bit ahead. They're doing a really good job. And if we can just get this weather to hold now through the month of August and kind of get into fall and it's not too wet, by the end of the construction season, I think everybody will be back in pretty good shape.
Let's talk about something that hasn't had construction begin on it yet, but it seems like there's some momentum to get it done, and that's the Five Points intersection near the top of Main Street. And where it meets South Street. And you may remember that a couple of months ago we had somebody write in asking what was going to go on there. And interestingly, not too long after that, you had a public meeting or two talking about mm-hmm. what to do there. Now that there is some momentum there, what would you like to see happen? What is your vision of how that intersection will look in, say, 5 years?
Well, I think, you know, there's a couple things. One, we've talked about how we want to tie it to downtown and extend that urban core. We've talked about the new baseball stadium being the kind of the anchor on the other end there. So I think there's several things we'd like to see. One, we'd like to see downtown come up towards Five Points area, whether that be in new housing, refurbishing of historic homes, the buildings along Five Points with some new amenities, restaurants, some entertainment that ties into and really strengthens the surrounding neighborhoods also, right? There's some pretty good-sized neighborhoods there that we would like to see some of that revitalization take place in, and then turn that into a little bit of a corridor as you get closer to Columbian Park and that new stadium that kind of gives you that baseball feel, that recreation feel, I think, that would be kind of cool, especially for the Columbian Park neighborhood, the Oakland neighborhood that's through there. I think people would really enjoy that. So you kind of go from that park, recreation, baseball feel into that more start to get that urban feel, but not quite downtown feel, and then head down the hill into that real downtown feel and really make that, from that baseball stadium to the river, really make that a arts, entertainment, sports and recreation, really make that a corridor. Now, I know we're not used to it, but if you think about it, it's really not that even far of a walk to walk from Columbian Park to downtown.
Sure.
I mean, going downhill's easier than coming uphill, right? But it's actually not very far. And if we looked at ways for people to walk, hike, bike, and maybe some type of transportation that might even make that a little bit easier, some type of loop or something, I mean, I think there's a lot of potential to make that a really cool corridor.
You mentioned the possibility of, like, entertainment, nightlife, restaurants. And right now, if you think about that intersection, the main anchor business there is a liquor store.
Yeah.
and can it continue that way if your vision is to be realized?
Well, I think, you know, from that first meeting that we've had and some follow-up phone calls that we've had, I think there are a lot of property owners in that area are very interested in redevelopment opportunities, either with buildings that they own or possibly selling property that they own to redevelopment opportunities and have opportunities to relocate in places that might be good for them too. So I think that that's a blank canvas right now. But as you indicated, we had a huge turnout at the meeting. And so far, we've had so much positive feedback, and everybody, for the most part, just in that spirit of this is a good idea. Let's work together. We possibility for us all to win on this, and I'm very pleased with that.
All right. Well, it's one of the many things we'll be following. Thanks, as always, for your time.
Thank you, Stan.
Unfortunately, we're out of time for this edition of Ask the Mayor, but do tune in at this time next week for our conversation with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Charlotte Tuggle will be your host for that program. And so remember that you can find that next week. You can also find all of these shows archived at our website, WBAA.org. And if at any time you've got a question for any of our four mayors, you can email those to ask@WBAA.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.